Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jarovich. Employees at the Columbus Dispatch newspaper are holding their National Labor Relations Board election to unionize as we speak. A few weeks ago, employees at the Columbus Metropolitan Library filed a petition for an election, officially indicating their intent to hold a union election. The Dispatch and the library are the latest in a recent wave of organized labor efforts, both locally and nationally. Places like Amazon and Starbucks have made national news over their unionizing efforts. Locally, everyone from Jenny Splendid Ice Cream's employees to nurses at Nationwide Children's Hospital have started a push toward organized labor. To tell us more about union support, as it appears to be surging, both locally and nationally, is Alyssa Widman-Neese, a reporter with Axios Columbus. Alyssa has been covering Ohio communities for more than 10 years, and she previously worked at the Dispatch. Welcome to All Sides, Alyssa.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you wrote an article for Axios Columbus called the Dispatch's in the article, you called the Dispatch's unionizing efforts the latest in a local wave. So I wanted to ask you, like, is it really a wave?
Yeah, it's something that my colleagues and I had been noticing for the past few years now. This isn't the first story that we wrote about this trend, and I'm sure it won't be the last. It seemed like every so often an announcement like the Dispatch's would come up. So I tried my best to compile as many examples as we could find of what was going on with organizing efforts that are, you know, in various stages of what can often be quite a lengthy process. And there are plenty of examples. And what I found that was most interesting to me was this sort of behind the scenes contrast between support for unions, you know, like the sentiment of organized labor is going up, but the number of folks in Ohio who are actual union members has been trending down. So the story that I wrote got into that data a little bit as well.
Are you seeing unionizing efforts from a wide variety of industries, or is it one type of industry?
It's across the board. As you mentioned, everyone from the folks scooping ice cream and making your latte in the morning to nurses taking care of your children at NCH, and some folks in the education sector who typically haven't had union representation here in Ohio, like KIPP Columbus, which is a charter school. I think folks often think of, you know, the traditional public school district or public university, which do have union representation. But Columbus College of Art and Design is also another one that has been, for the past few years, trying to get a contract hashed out.
So you mentioned some graphs you had in your article, and we can't see graphs on the radio, but you found that the support of unions was increasing, but the number of people in unions was decreasing. Now, I would just think, you know, like, the number of people in unions was decreasing because boomers are retiring and there's less people in unions. I don't know. Is that it, or what's happening?
Well, it's pretty complicated. As with anything, there's a lot of different factors at play here. I do think that a shifting jobs landscape has is one part of it, just a shift away from, you know, manufacturing over recent decades and things that are traditionally labor union jobs. But there's also been some push at the state and federal level to sort of weaken union power or make it more difficult, or in some cases to outlaw being able to be a union member if you're in a certain field of work. We've seen that in Ohio dating back to in 2011. Senate Bill 5 was huge and tried to take that right to organize away from university professors and other public workers. More recently, this past year, Senate Bill 1 took effect and didn't take away the unions, but now they can't strike. So I think there is a growing, as I said, just like push to make it a little more challenging and and not only to form the unions, but also maintain them or maybe have folks see the value in them.
The Dispatch is voting today, and we'll talk about that more a little bit later in the hour. But just voting and saying you want a union is a small step in the process, right?
Correct.
Okay. And they have a long way to go. Can you tell me? I mean, I know you're not a union expert, but can you tell me about this long process?
Sure. And that was something I needed to wrap my head around as well as I was reporting on this, because I think there's often this perception that, oh, the Dispatch put out this statement, you know, they're posting on social media that they want to unionize, like they're just going to do it.
And like, boom, suddenly union.
If then, only. I'm sure they'd all be very happy if it was that easy. Mm-hmm. You know, the first step in the process, if employees agree that they want to do this, they can ask the employer, in this case, USA Today Co., formerly Gannett, to recognize the union. And if they do, they could just start bargaining. At that moment, the company did not decide to do that. So now that's why we are having a vote today happening, is because of that lack of recognition. So now the employees will be voting in a secret ballot election. After those are tallied up, both sides have an opportunity, depending on how that shakes out, to you know, possibly file objections before the vote's actually certified. So that can take a little while. Then if the union does go forward, they still have a whole contract to hash out. So it can take, as we're learning with some local examples like KIPP and CCAD, they unionized in 2023, but they still don't have a contract. So depending on how long that process is dragged out, it can be a long time before you actually see the benefits of what you all are agreeing to do.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the wave of efforts to unionize locally with Axios Columbus reporter Alyssa Widman-Neese. I mentioned earlier the Columbus Metropolitan Library announced a unionization effort. You wrote about how some libraries in Central Ohio are unionized. So this didn't come out of nowhere, right? What libraries have unions?
Yeah, definitely not. It seemed that the suburban libraries made their push first. You know, locally, the Columbus Metropolitan Library has a very large footprint, and some suburbs have branches of the CML system, you know, in their areas. But the ones that don't are communities like Grandview, Worthington, Pickerington. They all unionized and they all have contracts. And Upper Arlington and then the system up in Delaware County are still working on it as well.
Okay. And so, I mean, I don't know when those started. I don't know how long it took, or if the library system recognized the union, then that takes a step out of the process, right? So,
yeah.
We'll have to do some research into that. But we also heard a lot of news recently about contract negotiations with Ohio State University nurses. They reached a deal a few months ago. And then I read that Nationwide Children's Hospital nurses started a push to unionize. And then I was surprised, because I guess I thought, if one group of nurses over here had a union, they must all have a union. But these unions are really case by case, aren't they?
Yes, I was surprised about that as well. And I had to make sure I was understanding when I looked at the OSU case. It was like, that wasn't their first contract. They've had, you know, that union in place for a while now, but NCH doesn't. And I think, you know, locally, it's probably difficult for you know, one group of employees to see maybe other employers having benefits for their employees based on what they're bargaining for. You have to wonder, you know, if there's a little competition there, if you have to, kind of keep up with what other places might be offering.
Well, yeah, and hospitals just right down the street from each other.
Correct.
The nurses could move around, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So you mentioned earlier the other side of the coin. Local unions have had some setbacks. So Senate Bill 1, a higher education law that prohibits university faculty from strikes. What does a piece of legislation like that do to union efforts? Does it give them more oomph, or does it deflate them?
That's a good question. I know that piece in particular was very sweeping. It was actually had a lot of focus as an anti-DEI bill at the higher education level. So I think in a way there was so much wrapped up into that that folks sometimes struggled to wrap their head around everything that was included. But there was a push to try and repeal it. Unfortunately, for the folks who were trying to do that, they weren't able to get the signatures they needed to put that to a vote. So I think that it did energize some people, but not enough to get that forward. But even despite that law taking effect, there's still been announcements, you know, recently locally of unionization efforts. So it doesn't seem like it's dampening them completely.
And you mentioned earlier about KIPP Columbus, the charter school, and also Columbus College of Art and Design. They both unionized in 2023, but neither have a contract. I mean, that's more than 2 years. Do you know if that's typical? Is it supposed to take that long, or does it just mean that they cannot come with to an agreement?
From what I've been able to gather, it's not exactly uncommon, but whether it's supposed to be that way, I'm not exactly sure. You know, some sides would likely say that the other side might be dragging their feet a little bit, I think, in those cases.
Right. I don't know if there are deadlines or dates or anything like that, or if it, a contract process, like who's to say how many meetings you're supposed to have, right?
Yeah. And I think that's part of you know, what advocates have been saying about just in general the weakened capabilities of unions right now is things like that. Like some folks might think, you know, what's the point in unionizing if there's no real guardrails to make sure this process happens in a efficient manner or a quick manner, or if my employer is able to you know, hire a consultant that can help with some union busting tactics. It has to be a bit, you know, defeating to try and make that process get off the ground then.
And just to circle back to what you originally said at the beginning. So you found actual data. You were able to make some graphs that so support for unions is growing, but the number of people in unions is lower. And we don't really know what that means, right?
Yeah. And it's specifically the share of workers who are union members, so like a percentage. And, you know, so another factor of that could be, you know, the new jobs that are added in the economy just aren't in the union sphere, or some of those other factors that we mentioned before, like changing fields or just making it more difficult at the state and federal level to make that happen.
We have been talking about the recent wave of local unionization efforts with Alyssa Widman-Neese, a reporter for Axios Columbus. Thank you so much for your time today, Alyssa.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk with a representative from the unionizing efforts at the Dispatch and at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. That is When All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. Recently, the employees at the Columbus Dispatch newspaper and the Columbus Metropolitan Library have announced plans to unionize. This follows a growing unionization effort, both locally and nationally. Places like Amazon and Starbucks have made national news over their unionizing efforts. Joining us to give us an update on local unionizing efforts, we have Luke Avname, a driver and sorter for the Columbus Metropolitan Library in Gahanna. He's an active member of the Union Organizing Committee. Welcome to All Sides, Luke.
Hi, thank you, Amy.
And also joining us is Jordan Laird, a news reporter at the Columbus Dispatch and a member of the Dispatch News Guild Organizing Committee. Welcome to All Sides, Jordan.
Hi, thanks for having me, Amy. And it's great to be here with Luke. We're big fans of the library and of your meeting rooms.
So, Jordan, let's start with you, because as we speak, there is a vote going on related to the Dispatch News Guild Union. What is happening? What does it mean that there's a vote happening right now?
Yeah, I had to turn off my notifications because the group chat is really popping off. People are voting right now. A representative of the National Labor Relations Board is in a conference room at the dispatch office right now, where people are casting their ballots to prove to management and the NLRB that we indeed have the vast majority on board supporting us.
Okay, so more than a month ago, you told management about the union effort. So so what happens next? This vote happens, and then what?
Yeah, I mean, a month ago, we went public. We said we have a supermajority. We signed this mission statement. We said voluntarily recognize us. We did not expect USA Today Company to voluntarily recognize us because they seem to never do that with their papers. Today we're voting to prove that we will not know the results by how much we crushed this today. It'll take a couple weeks because we not everybody is able to vote in person. Some will be voting by mail. Within the next couple weeks, we'll get the results, and then we will hopefully start bargaining. I heard Allison talking with you earlier about bargaining and how it can take a while, and that is true, especially for a first contract, and we're prepared for that. But as soon as we have a union, we do have protections, including going into a phase called status quo, where management cannot make major changes to our working conditions without negotiating with the union. So we get benefits right away. It might take a while to get the first contract, but we're in it for the long haul.
Luke, let's jump over to you with the libraries. In November, your group announced an intent to unionize. And then last month, you made it official by submitting to the Ohio Employment Relations Board. So what are the next steps for your group?
Very similar to Jordan's steps. Our next steps currently are waiting for the State Employee Relations Board to certify our election. We spent the last year and a half collecting union authorization cards from our coworkers, and we have a supermajority. That's over 60% of our coworkers signed these cards. So our next step is to wait for our cards to be certified and then to get a date that we will have our vote.
So similar to what's happening at the Dispatch today, you will also have a vote where you go into a room and you have a national representative there certifying the vote and that kind of thing. So we don't have a date for that yet, though, for the library.
There's no date, and I think ours might be mail-in ballots only. I'm not positive on that yet.
Okay. And so, Luke, what are you and your group looking at with this union? Like, when you decided we're going to do a union, what are your asks of management?
I think asks vary a lot depending on where we work in the library. For example, people in branches have to deal with a lot of security incidents, and they need to have an adequate number of security staff available, which isn't always the case. So safety is one of the big reasons that a lot of the people have been supporting our efforts to unionize.
And Luke, also, Alyssa mentioned in our previous segment that this is not unprecedented. There are library unions here in Central Ohio. Grandview, Worthington, and Pickerington have unionized and they have contracts. Upper Arlington and Delaware are still working on their contract. So did the Columbus Metropolitan Library just kind of piggyback on that, or had this been in the works for a while?
I know that there were previous efforts to unionize the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and none of them really reached the point that we got before they fizzled out. But we are working with the Ohio Federation of Teachers, which is the group that has helped all of these other libraries that you've mentioned to unionize over the past few years.
Okay, so you need, so basically it's hard to do it on your own, so you're working with OFT. What does that mean? You'll, because you're not a teacher, but you'll be a part of that teachers union?
True, true. I think that libraries are close enough that we fit very well with OFT. But we're all very excited at the library. There's, we're all just very excited to be doing this.
And then Jordan, back to you with the dispatch. What is your group asking management for? It's USA Today is your upper management. What are you asking for?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't gotten to the negotiating table yet, but some of the driving reasons for why we're doing this are we have some great journalists here. Don't get me wrong. We put out a great product and we serve our community, but we have just hemorrhaged staff in recent years. And that is because of years without raises and pay inequity, where raises feel very arbitrary. And some great journalists are just really being overlooked. So pay equity and having some standards about pay minimums are a big thing for us. And we hope that that will reduce turnover, because we have just lost a lot of staff.
And we just talked with Luke about how they're joining with OFT, so the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You called yourself the Dispatch News Guild. What are you joining with?
Yeah, we're joining the News Guild, which is part of the CWA, Communication Workers of America. The News Guild represents tens of thousands of journalists across the U.S. and Canada, including some sister papers in Ohio, the Akron Beacon Journal and the Canton Repository, to name a few.
And you also are working, is it true you're working with the Advocate in Newark? Are they a part of USA Today, or are they an affiliate of the Dispatch? I don't know that connection.
Sure. The Newark Advocate staff is part of our union because we operate as one newsroom. We're one newsroom putting out two newspapers now. They combined our newsrooms within the last couple years. They have just a few people on staff, but we love the Newark Advocate staff. They are part of our union.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're getting updates on local efforts to unionize with Luke Avname, a driver for the Columbus Metropolitan Library and an active member of the union organizing committee. Also with us is Jordan Laird, a news reporter for the Columbus Dispatch and a member of the Dispatch News Guild organizing committee. We asked the management of both the library and the Dispatch to join the show today. Both groups sent statements. So, Luke, I'll start with the library statement, which reads in part, "We respect the rights of our employees who are for or against unionization and will comply with the law. CML is proud to offer competitive wages to both full and part-time employees, along with comprehensive benefits packages and paid time off. Our compensation and benefits serve as a benchmark for libraries in our region and throughout Ohio." So, Luke, what's your reaction to that statement? Do they offer competitive wages and comprehensive benefits?
I've seen that statement copy and pasted a lot recently. I believe that it used to be true, but since Worthington has unionized, they now offer better wages than Columbus does.
Okay. And so it also you mentioned, so the statement doesn't mention anything about safety, and you mentioned that safety is a big concern. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What sort of safety concerns do people at the who work at the library have?
I would say primarily understaffing of security personnel around the library branches. Sometimes security is pulled from one location to go to another location, leaving the first location without a security officer. But one thing that we really want to emphasize currently, at least with management, is that we want management and the administration to remain neutral throughout our voting process, to not try to influence it in one way or the other, and especially to not use public funds to engage in any union busting tactics.
And are you a driver for the library. So this union will, I'm assuming, will have librarians in it. Because when you think library, you think librarians, right? So the librarians in it. And then who else? So you're a driver. What other jobs are involved in here?
Pretty much everybody that is not management. So all of the drivers and the sorters where I work, plus all of the branch staff. Unfortunately, security, due to an Ohio law, is not able to be in our union, but they are able to form their own union.
And Jordan, I wanted to come back to you. We received a statement from the owners of the Dispatch, which is USA Today, as we mentioned. We heard from the VP of Labor Relations, Amy Garand, who says, USA Today Company values our employees, and we are committed to providing fair compensation, meaningful opportunities, and a workplace grounded in open dialogue. Our focus remains on delivering trusted, essential journalism to the greater Columbus community. So what comments do you have on that statement, Jordan?
We're also focused on delivering great journalism to the greater Columbus community. And I look forward to working with management to further that goal. We are by far not the first newspaper to unionize at this massive company that owns so many newspapers across the country. We're actually, other than USA Today, their flagship, of the local papers, we're one of the largest that hadn't done it yet. There are about 50 papers that they have that are unionized already. And we want some of the protections that they have.
So USA Today should be used to this, is what you're saying?
We're a little late to the party. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, starting with the Arizona Republic in Phoenix, there's been a wave of unionization, well, across journalism, but including at USA Today Company with newspapers unionizing. And we're a little late to the party, but we're here.
Mm-hmm. And Jordan, recently the owners of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette announced the newspaper would be shutting down. They cited union negotiations that went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The owners lost the court battle. And basically, if you read between the lines of the statement from the owners of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the Block family, they're saying that the union's demands will cost too much and the only thing left to do was close down the paper. So what does that make you think for your union efforts when you hear something like that out of Pittsburgh?
Well, we're really sad for the people of Pittsburgh and the journalists in Pittsburgh. It's really offensive that they would claim that they need to shut down the paper for that reason. And I do not fear that that will happen here. But it is terrible what has happened in Pittsburgh.
Do you worry about your union negotiation efforts, getting involved in legalities? Like, does your union have enough money to hire a lawyer for a long process?
I mean, we're joining the News Guild. We're joining an established union. We're joining a local, the Northeast Ohio News Guild local, which includes the Akron Beacon Journal and the Canton Repository. And they have resources to help us before we start paying our dues once we get our first contract. I'm not worried.
Okay. And at the Post-Gazette, they had been on strike for quite a while. They had been on strike for quite a while, but the newspaper kept running because there were people working there who were not in the union. So they kept going, and they took it all the way up to the Supreme Court. What does that make you feel about, like, the unionizing process for reporters and newspaper people, that that they didn't just negotiate with them and bargain with them, that it went on for so long?
Yeah, it's really offensive and a shame what happened in Pittsburgh, but that is definitely a very different company than who we are dealing with. USA Today Company has contracts with, I think, about 50 unionized papers, so I'm not worried anything remotely close to that will happen here.
Okay, you can use other contracts as examples and that kind of thing. Luke, back to you. We're talking about the idea of it being a long process, there being a lot of negotiations. I mean, you're at the very beginning of this process. You mentioned earlier that there have been other efforts to unionize. Are you worried about this effort that you're a part of fizzling out too, just because it's so hard and takes so long?
I'm not worried at all. We have over 60% of staff currently support the union, and it's more and more and more every single day. Like Jordan mentioned, I'm getting notifications all of the time, new people, even brand new people to the library joining on day one. Library staff are very excited about it, and it's not fizzling out at all.
Okay. And this idea of a long process, you're with the OFT. Does your group have enough money to be able to hire a lawyer or a contract negotiator to work with you, or will OFT help you with all of that?
OFT will provide assistance with that. We will be our own union, but we'll be able to use the resources of OFT, which means their lawyer, which we've already been doing. So yeah, it's a good group to be with.
Okay. And just to end, I wanted to get both of your opinions on the vibes right now, for lack of a better phrase. Alyssa with Axios Columbus, she found she had two graphs in her story, and one graph showed that support for unionizing was increasing, but the number of people in unions overall has decreased. So, Jordan, what does that make you feel? That there is this local wave of unionizing, but there's less unions. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure why there's a smaller share of people in unions. I think it's possible that we will see that reverse because people are waking up and saying we need to unionize more. I know that people here at the Columbus Dispatch and Newark Advocate are extremely enthusiastic, and it has been just amazing since we went public how much support we've gotten from the labor community and the community at large, people signing our petition, people sharing our posts. And I think people are very pro-labor now, and I'm feeling that love.
And Luke, what about you? This idea that the support of unions is increasing, but the number of people actually in unions is decreasing.
I think that workers in general here have been waking up and rediscovering the power that we have when we come together. I think when we come together, there's nothing that we can't accomplish. There's a long history of labor struggle in this country, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
We've been talking about local union efforts and efforts to unionize with Luke Avname, a driver for the Columbus Metropolitan Library and an active member of the Union Organizing Committee. Luke, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Amy.
And also Jordan Laird, a news reporter for the Columbus Dispatch and a member of the Dispatch News Guild Organizing Committee. Jordan, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Amy.
And coming up, we're going to hear more about what it means to unionize by looking at some of the history and looking toward the future of the process. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. There's been an increase with local organizations announcing efforts to unionize. Everyone from Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream employees to nurses at Nationwide Children's Hospital have started a push toward organized labor. Starbucks unions locally and nationally have been working on contracts since 2021, and some still don't have finalized contracts. The unionization process is long and complicated. It involves a state board, a national board. It involves lawyers, lawsuits, and appeals. Joining us now to talk about efforts to unionize in Ohio is John O'Keefe, Associate Professor of History at Ohio University Chillicothe campus and Director of Communications of the United Academics of Ohio University. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Amy. I'm very glad to be here.
So before we go into details about Ohio University and what you've been working on, I wanted to talk to you about the long process that I just outlined. This is not just a few months and then suddenly you have a union and a contract. This is years. Why does it take so long?
Yes. Well, it's important to really build a strong organization. And that means a lot of one-on-one discussions with your coworkers. And working to test support first off, right? You know, how are people feeling about a union, and will a union solve the issues that people are facing? And so you want to go into your election knowing that you have a really strong majority, and that's what we were able to do We won our election with a supermajority, but that took years of building up that support and preparing for that election.
Yeah, so that building of support taking years, I can understand, like, if you walk across the hall and have a conversation to be like, wouldn't it be nice if we got paid more? But then, yeah. And then they say yes. But then do you find that a lot of people just don't understand what it means to be in a union?
So I think people have a broad general idea, right? I think it's also important to think about kind of the nuts and bolts and the hard work that goes into that, but also that the union is us, right? Mm-hmm. By all of us working together, this is the organization that we build, and that it's important to get everyone's voice in so that when we do push for a contract, we make sure that what's in that contract reflects everyone's concerns and issues that we're facing, right? So we're really passionate about our mission. We're really passionate about education, and research. And so, that's kind of built into our approach. We obviously were among the lowest paid state university faculty in the state. That's in addition to our desire for building a great university, right, where students can get a quality education, and being able to attract top faculty is really key to that, right? Mm-hmm.
And in our previously, we were talking with a representative who is working to form the union with Columbus Metropolitan Library, and he brought up the idea of safety, and that mm-hmm. made me think, because, it's more than just wages. I said we want to be paid more. But the safety idea, I mean, that's kind of how unions started in this country, was, manufacturing workers or people who were like in coal mines and they were in unsafe conditions and the management wouldn't do anything about it. So talk to me about that issue where, because you're sitting there, you work for a university. But then talk about that idea of like the safety issue.
Yeah, I mean, this is also an issue across, right, all forms of employment, right, and safety takes different shapes there. Unfortunately, right, we live in a very violent society, and sometimes that comes onto college campuses, and so we have, right, so our current status right now is we are in the process of contract negotiation. So we have a proposal on campus safety that we have proposed, and we also have a proposal tracker, right, that lists, right, kind of the status of all of those, and we've reached some tentative agreements on a number of issues, it's something that we care about a lot on campus, right? We want to be able to teach in a safe environment. Mm.
Earlier in the show, we talked about newer efforts to organize, that's the workers at the Columbus Dispatch, the workers at the Columbus mm-hmm. Metropolitan Library. Is there one type of industry that has an easier time establishing a union over another?
I think we all face a lot of similar challenges. The employer response is also really important, right? We're in a not so union friendly environment here in Ohio, right? State law puts a number of hurdles in our way. For instance, we are part-time faculty are legally prohibited from joining our union, right? We would love to have them join us, but state law forbids it. Different groups face different situations based on that environment. So yeah, and each individual workplace culture and employer decisions also affect that path as well.
Well, and you're a history professor, so yes. So I'm going to ask you, was it easier to form a union 50 years ago than it is now?
I would say yes, it was a much more union friendly environment at that time. And right, it was also different economic conditions as well, right? We hadn't seen that push for deregulation and also deindustrialization that happened that weakened a lot of really strong unions that had built a lot of workplace protections and had strong salaries. for workers, right? Which I think often is sort of this nostalgia for workplace conditions of the past, right? It was a more union-friendly environment, and that's why a lot of blue-collar jobs paid really well, right? We had a much higher minimum wage that made it easy to support yourself, and part of that was, you know, the result of union action as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we've seen some big changes in the last 50 years when it comes to union strength and union power.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a recent wave of efforts to unionize in Ohio and Central Ohio with John O'Keefe, Associate Professor of History at Ohio University's Chillicothe campus and the Director of Communications for United Academics of Ohio University. Let's talk more about the union you're involved with. This was years in the making, and you mentioned that you do have contract proposals in front of university leaders, but it's not a completed deal. Can you give us an update on the process where you are? You said you have some tentative agreements, but can you explain it a little bit more?
Yeah. So, we've also been talking to our faculty about, right, you know, what they especially want to have prioritized in our negotiations. And like I said, we're among the lowest paid state university faculty in the state. And we would especially like to catch up to, we're a Research One institution, we would like to catch up with our Research One peers. So that's what we proposed in our salary and compensation proposal, which was back in November. So it's actually been over 75 days since we've given that proposal to the university administration, and we have yet to hear back from them. So that's where we are right now, right? I will also say it's very common for employers to use the strategy of denial through delay. And so this means that the university is shelling out a lot of money to law firms that could be going towards salary faculties or other resources here at the university. So we're pushing the university to respond to our salary proposal and compensation proposal right now.
So when you say you issued this proposal in November, but then you told me mm-hmm. that you have tentative deals on other things, are these different parts of it?
Yeah. So each of these elements, right? So in negotiating a contract, right? A contract will have certain provisions, right? So I mentioned safety. You might have things like campus parking, right? And other similar things, right? In some ways we kind of started with some issues that maybe were kind of getting things a little bit kind of comfortable at the table and willing to kind of build a relationship so that we could effectively negotiate a contract, right? So and then right kind of moving on to issues that we might face more difficulty in coming to an agreement, right? So we do have tentative agreements on things like health, safety, and security and academic freedom. We're waiting for, other responses on things like appointments and renewals or union dues or other issues like that. So that's basically this process is underway, but obviously we want to make sure that faculty are able to teach and address also the recent increases in the cost of living that have made our salaries not so competitive in the past few years.
You mentioned come to the table. Have you actually had a meeting at a table?
So yes, there have been a number of meetings in the fall, right? And once again, right, we did have some initial delays there, right? We were all ready to negotiate right after that election, but we have seen some, right, kind of foot dragging from the university, but we were able to have a number of productive meetings in the fall semester. Now we're gearing up for our next series of meetings to negotiate the contract, and we are very much awaiting that response from the university on salary and compensation in particular.
Do you have another meeting on the books for the spring semester?
So yes, we have one coming up in a few days. If I recall correctly, I believe it is January 18th. Is when that next meeting is scheduled.
Okay. We reached out to Ohio University leadership for comment on where things stand, and we heard from a university spokesman who said he had no additional updates to share beyond a statement that was previously provided. So that statement appeared in an NBC4 story about contract negotiations, and it said the university was keeping negotiations confidential to respect Ohio laws and keep negotiations in good faith. So what does that mean to you about they want to keep it confidential and in good faith?
I want to be clear. I'm not a lawyer, but mm-hmm. I do know that that term good faith has a very specific meaning when it comes to labor law. So there are very specific things that that good faith means. I believe that's a statement to kind of indicate, you know, that they are following the process. Like I said, we have had some productive meetings and have been able to reach some tentative agreements on some issues, but we are still waiting to hear back from the university or reach a tentative agreement on a number of very important things for our contract.
While unions have momentum and local unions in Ohio have had some setbacks, and you mentioned one example, it's Senate Bill 1, the higher education law, that does a lot of things. But one of the things it does is prohibit university faculty from striking. So what does something like that in Senate Bill 1 do to your union efforts? I mean, you can't strike if you're unhappy.
So I want to emphasize that that Senate Bill 1 encountered enormous opposition, even though, you know, it still went through the legislature and it was still signed by the governor and became law. Strikes are often something that that catches a lot of attention, and rightly mm-hmm. so. And strikes are really important, especially when that relationship between labor and management starts to really break down. But that's not the only tool that we have at our disposal. And so you can still build a strong union, right? It takes a lot more work. It takes a lot more resources, but we're going in feeling really confident, right? We had a super majority of faculty, eligible faculty, voting yes in this union. So, we're confident we have a lot of support among our faculty and beyond, right, in the community as well. So
I mentioned earlier that it took years for you to get to this place. When did you have mm-hmm. that election to make it official?
So the election was last spring.
Oh, okay. But you've been talking, you've been talking about it before that. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so I think the real impetus that really got things started was several years ago, the university had some layoffs, and that really jolted a lot of people. A lot of really great faculty lost their positions at Ohio University, right? Who had been great teachers, great researchers. And so that really galvanized faculty and got us working together and realizing that a union was really going to be needed to protect us.
Just in your negotiations, whenever you talk about, like, you know, something like Senate Bill 1, or back in the day, what was called Senate Bill 5, which was an anti-union bill, or there's been a lot of efforts in Ohio to impact union efforts. What do you mm-hmm. think? Like, how do you keep doing this when you know that state law is trying to stop you, basically?
We're working within the law, right? And we still, like I said, we still have a lot at our disposal to build a strong and successful union. Obviously, the right SB1 was a pretty big setback, and it's had a lot of other negative effects on our teaching environment, the end of diversity, equity, and inclusion, right, also meant it sent a real negative message to students and faculty about who's really welcome and who's really respected on our campus. And so, you know, we really want to push back against this, right? I know there's also been some recent developments with the Black Student Union at Ohio University as well. So, and I want to acknowledge kind of, you know, that they're also dealing with the aftermath of this bill as well. So, yes, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Well, in just the, we have about 30 seconds left, but in that time, I spoke previously with the people representing the union for the library and for the dispatch. They're at the very beginning of this process. You're more deep into it. What advice would you have for them?
I'm going to say, stay strong. Keep talking with each other, right? Keep working on building that organization and keeping people engaged and involved. It's a long road, but it is a good road to be on.
We've been talking about the recent wave of efforts to unionize in Ohio, and we've been talking with John O'Keefe, Associate Professor of History at Ohio University Chillicothe Campus and Director of Communications for United Academics of Ohio University. Thank you for your time today, John.
Thank you so much.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.